is the Day Zero Update for December 16th, 2018. I'm Floyd Bardolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And this will be the last show of the year. Where did this year go?
I've been talking to my kid about that stuff, though. I think at our age, it is what we call the days are long, but the years are short. That's what it feels like.
Yes. Yeah, it really does. But we have had a lot of really good gaming this year. I think despite a lot of the bullshit that we've seen in the industry, it has kind of been a banner year for...
The content has been fantastic. There's no getting around it.
Yeah. I suspect we'll be talking a little bit more later about that. But first, we got some news stories, and of course, we're going to talk about what we've been playing for the past week. And I guess I'll start us off today. I guess I touched on this a little bit briefly on Let's Weekend. I got myself a premium license for Launchbox, so I've been setting that up as my emulator front end. And nice. It turns out it's more than just an emulator front end. This thing can be a front end for everything, including stuff like movies and Steam games and your music library and everything. And it'll present all of that to you in a nice, if you wanted like a dedicated 10-foot interface, you can operate with a remote controller or a gamepad. That's one of the really cool things about it. Setting it up it's definitely easier than working with some of the other front ends I've used. Like Hyperspin was just a nightmare to get set up. But this is, it's got a lot of wizards to get you going. It's got, pre-baked configurations for just about every emulator out there on the market. So, it's really nice in that sense that you can just pick an emulator and it'll give you a link right to the emulator's download page and you can just grab it and install it.
That is outstanding.
Yeah. It's a lot of nice user facing features like that that really make this one of the front ends that I actually believe it's actually worth the money that it's asking for, as far as the premium features go. As far as a free version, it's also fantastic. So you just don't get that 10-foot interface in that mode. Yeah. You just get a desktop mode, which is fine too. So that's been good. I've been having issues with the Game Gear getting that running, and I was beating my head against that yesterday, trying to figure out what was going on there. Finally figured it out. Turns out I had a bad Game Gear bias.
That would do it.
Yeah. So, Game Gear games, would like boot to a black screen or just be completely garbled or, do things like have audio that drones on for no apparent reason. Bad bias kind of sorted that out for the most part, except, for Shining Force, the Sword of Hagia. That one. On the Genesis Plus GX core in RetroArch, don't play so good. So for the Game Gear games, I just decided I would set up Kega Fusion and use that, and that's been working fine. So it's nice that I can do that on a per platform basis, and it's a really good. I could even do it on a per game basis if I wanted to get that granular, but I figure Game Gear games. Kega Fusion will run those and everything else so far. RetroArch and my GameCube stuff, Dolphin standalone, even though RetroArch does have a Dolphin core, the standalone version is more up to date, so I'm going to go with that one. And so I've got other stuff to get in there. I got my Saturn still to get in. I've got the PlayStation 2 games. I got a whole folder of my discs that I need to import into that and get PCS X2 running again. I got the folder for it. I just haven't plugged it into Launchbox yet. It's a great front end. It's a great project, and I think this is one of those nice things where you could literally just have a dedicated PC that does nothing but emulators and have a really nice, pretty front end for it. So, that may be a project I look into the future. Apart from that, I've been playing Tetris Effect, which is fantastic still.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk more about that later. And I've been getting overwhelmed by all of the sales and stuff that have been going on for the past time.
They've just been merciless.
Yeah. The PSN sale has been really good. There's been a lot of good stuff there. The GOG sale is amazing. Especially if you're into the old classic stuff. Those are sold off for like a couple of bucks, bucks a pop. Like, for the first six Might and Magic games, it's like $2. So it's like, why would I not get that? Of course, I wouldn't get that because I didn't see it. So, whoops. And yeah, what else has been going on as far as sales? Oh yeah, I forgot my Twitch Prime stuff has just been piling on crap into my inventory. It's like, I'm getting a lot of games here I didn't know about. And they also added, I was looking at it, it's like they have a send as gift button, which is weird. I haven't seen that until now. So I'm wondering if that's just a thing they're going to do for the holidays or if it's something that they do going forward. So it's kind of cool.
Find out.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitch Prime, it's a nice benefit to being an Amazon Prime member, I guess. Because I certainly wouldn't have subscribed otherwise.
I've used the hell out of it.
Yeah. I like me some Amazon Prime. So, well, when my stuff actually gets here on time and in one piece.
Yes.
Which is not a guarantee with Amazon anymore. But that's going on a whole other rabbit hole. So, yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Pat?
Pure Pool has been dominating my gaming time all this past week. Just, you can sit me down in front of a nine ball game and, you know, my day is done. So I'm actually playing it right now. Even. So I can just see myself getting unlimited mileage out of this game. They really did a great job with it. And I mean, I don't need much out of a pool game regardless, but it's nice when they do it well.
Yeah.
And this is the perfect example of that.
Yeah. I really like the customization of that game. You got a lot that you can tweak and change and just, you know, especially as far as the table goes, and just make it look to any way you want.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I haven't even really messed around with that yet. I've just been playing through the career mode and just taking in all of the nine ball.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of nice because you could the table that you customize will carry on through the career mode, so it's just kind of the table. It's a nice thing to have if you like, you know.
I'm gonna have to do that.
Yeah, if you prefer red felt, you can do that. If you prefer black felt, you can do that. You know, it's all
Oh man.
So yeah, Pure Pool. I mean, what is it you find especially like good about that game? Because there have been a lot of pool games, and you've tried a lot of them. What makes this one so sticky for you?
I don't know. That's the weird thing about it. I haven't really gone around just saying I'm looking for a pool game. What's available? This just happened to pop up on the sale, and I sat down and, you know, $3. I'm not gonna blink at that. And it plays a hell of a good game of pool.
Yeah.
And it nailed everything about it: the atmosphere, the physics, the approach to the game. It feels good to play. I think a lot of pool games kind of fall into that pitfall. They don't really know how to execute.
Right.
And that's not a problem here. Ooh. But it just – sometimes a studio will release a game and they just nail it. And that's what happened here.
Cool.
And other than that, I've just been kind of playing random shit, you know, going back to the whole PS3 hack and everything. Seeing what I can do with that. Still hoping they get a few more RetroArch cores working for it, but yeah, I'm even just happy with it how it is right now.
Yeah, it's set up pretty nicely the way you have it. So.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So, how about you, Chris?
Yeah. So I checked out Below, which is out now on Xbox One, finally after 5 years of development. And it is pretty cool. It's the new game from Kebby Barros, who made what did they make? They made Clash of Heroes, my Magic game, made Critter Crunch, and some other cool games. And this one, I was listening to Game Informer's podcast last week, which they talked to Nathan Valla, one of the co-founders of the studio, about the game, and he said like the interesting thing that the inspiration is from a title that was announced for the PS3 by Q Games called Pixel Junk Dungeons, which never came to fruition, though I think it might have ended up turning into Pixel Junk Shooter. But he said just from the name alone, he had these great ideas for sort of a dungeon crawling game, but from like a top-down perspective and that sort of style that Q Games did, where it was kind of like a single screen game, very much making games with like smaller characters on them, but having using the full real estate of an HD screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what this is, though it's not really a single screen anymore.
Almost sounded like Brutal, the way you described it.
Yeah, this one, it's much more of a like a dark Zelda game, mm-hmm. But a bit more top down, and but with a little bit of Dark Souls in there, and a couple other things in there, which so far I've just played about an hour or so, but it's really cool. There, like the Dark Souls part of it, even just comes into play. Like the you hold left trigger to hold up your shield, right trigger to attack. Sort of an unconventional control scheme for what it is. But yeah, you collect items like scavenge for things, which you can use to craft into new items, which I threw the water ahead at the beginning with some food I found around, turnip and some other stuff, and created soup, which I don't know what that does. I assume probably gives you more health than a normal potion or water would. But yeah, it's. I ended up dying at a certain point just through. I stepped on spikes that shot out of the ground. Mm. I didn't know were there. And then, what was interesting is what happened is like, oh, now there's a new wanderer that showed up to the island, which I had to start from the beginning. Which, once I knew what I was doing, it didn't take long to get back where I was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's. It's a pretty cool game, really cool style to it. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. And that is on Game Pass for Xbox One. Hmm. So people with Game Pass should definitely check it out. I also just started Mutant Year Zero on Xbox One. Same thing, it's on Game Pass. Played a little bit of the beginning part of it, and it seems pretty cool so far. It's still kind of weird going into like XCOM-style turn-based combat, but with like you're able to move around freely ahead of that.
Hmm.
It's like a really weird thing when you're used to like, okay, you know, XCOM missions, you know, you start, you land. It's like, all right, now you start moving grids. It's like, no, you can watch the guys move around. You can see their like view circles, I guess, what they can sort of see around them. And so you try and stay on the outskirts and try and set yourself up. For potential like stealth kills, which I could do in the early part because the guys only have 4 health and the mutant ducks like he's like a bow gun is a silent weapon and that does 4 damage I think, and if you crit it's 5 damage, so I was able to try and find a good spot, and I think once you initialize the combat you can kind of move up closer because you get 2 moves per turn, so I could move up and then take a shot. And I managed to take out both the guys that way, just kind of getting close enough to initialize it without triggering them calling for anybody else, and managed to take them out. Curious to check out what the non-combat part of that is, because it seems like it could be pretty cool. Just kind of had this somewhat of an open world to explore while going towards the different combat encounters that are in there. But that's pretty neat as well, and I've also been playing The Missing, which is Swery's new game. I forget what the full title is. I think it's The Missing, J.J. Mechfield, and the Island of Memories. Very long title. And it's pretty cool. It's a side-scrolling like puzzle platformer. I think you're playing as J.J. I think it's the character you're playing. You're with one of your best friends, I think Emma, and for whatever reason you kind of go to sleep, and when you wake up she is gone and you're kind of chasing after her, which you get a certain ways in, you see like this big demon thing is sort of chasing her away, and so you're kind of continuing to go along with that, and sort of along the way you end up going down this field as there's a storm hitting the whatever. I think it's an island they're at. And the storm, you see like a bunch of lightning strikes hitting around. setting the field on fire, the windmills that are around. And that just strikes her and kills her. And then this weird deer doctor shows up, which is a doctor that has a deer head, like an actual deer head, I guess. Mm-hmm. But when he leaves, he runs like a deer.
Okay.
It's very weird. It's like, oh, that's a human with like a deer mask on. It's like, no, wait, he's running away like a deer. That's very unnerving. But he like reanimates you. And from there on, your character can, when you sustain damage, one of your body parts comes off. And so that, at least the early parts I'm in, has been part of the puzzle stuff where I had this wood plank I was trying to get across this gap, but only half of it's on land, half it's hanging off. And as you go to get across the other side, it goes down. Mm. So you can't get across. So you have to intentionally run into this barbed wire to get rid of body parts so you can throw it onto the other end of the board to keep it up. And along the way, you're also, another part of your moveset is the ability to crouch and crawl.
Yeah.
So there are plenty of obstacles where you have to, you know, crouch under. A couple times I've had items up on top, like blocks that I need to climb around that I have to like run into these like barbed wire or whatever, break off an arm and throw it at it to knock it down. And so it uses that stuff pretty well. They have collectibles, just like pure collectible that are donuts hanging around. Sometimes they're out of reach and you just knock off an arm and throw it at it to knock it down. What else is there? The texting. You have a phone that, for whatever reason, like spirit's version of your friend, like is texting you. And it's really good. Because there's lots of dumb like emoji stickers. Hmm. I should look up them because I think they're out on iOS, but I don't have that. Let's see. Yeah, but and some of them are just have curses in them, which is pretty cool, in really fucked up ways. Let me see if I can find these things.
I'm starting to wonder if Swery is going through some shit right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think he's done something really cool here. It's very much in the style of like the Deadly Premonition, that kind of semi realistic.
Yeah.
But very much within like a cheaper budget kind of thing. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to putting some more time into that. Here's a little example of some of the emoji stuff that's on the phone. But yeah, it's a pretty cool game. I'll definitely look forward to putting some more time into it. I've heard good things about the story itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been kind of it. How about you, Lee?
I've been just putting in time to Red Dead and then playing Hide the Christmas Presents from My Family. It is by far the most stressful puzzle game I've ever played. My wife is the type that wants to open up all of her Christmas presents like on November 12th. so it makes it really hard to be like, all right, we're not going to do this, guys. So I've been hiding them, wrapping them, trying to figure all that out. And just work has been nuts because it's fourth quarter for us. So I haven't really had much time for really anything. I tried to put a little time into Assassin's Creed Origins. And I think I'm really starting to get to the point where I can't, with the exception of a few games here and there that I don't really feel are going to waste my time, like with just bloat, I think I'm pretty much done with most AAA titles. I can't do this stuff anymore. Particularly with the, like this heavy nod to monetization, it just feels like none of these developers actually respect my time. And they're just a lot more interested in maximizing profit. So it's kind of got me really, kind of trying to figure out where like my tastes fit into all of this. Cause like the three, ironically, I'm sitting here saying I'm pretty much done with AAA gaming, but probably my top three for game of the year are all AAA. But the thing is, none of them have microtransactions, and I don't really feel like any of them have bloat either. So yeah, I'm just in a weird place trying to figure out where I'm going to be looking forward to putting my money into gaming wise these days. So yeah, I think the new year is going to be interesting seeing what's coming out. But the other thing that I did do is I upgraded to AT&T Fiber because they offered us a killer deal and it's much faster. And you know, the funny part is I've been sitting here for the longest time, for years since we've been doing this podcast, kind of like saying like physical. And it's always been because of money and because of our data caps. And now all of a sudden that I don't have a data cap, I'm like looking at everything that I can get digitally. And I'm like, God, if they would just match what I could get this for physically, I wouldn't go buy the physical version. I'd get it digitally if they could just get it to like the Black Friday sales for a lot of the AAA stuff where it was like $30. Like, I know some of the digital stuff came close, but it doesn't really seem like across the board. And so it's funny because in a lot of ways, my attitude has sort of shifted because now I don't have a data cap where I'm like, man, you know, because the thing is like I don't really ever resell games anyway. Like I'm a savvy enough consumer. I know what I buy is what I'm going to keep.
I'm right there with you.
And so like the digital switch would be something that I am now capable of doing, but I can't in certain instances because like if the digital version is, you know, $20 more, I'm not buying that shit.
Yeah.
You know. And then on top of that, you know, you obviously then you start talking about like, okay, what if I got to delete this? You know, you end up with some data management issues, but it's so funny, like not having a data cap has made me go, it would be a much easier for me to just jump into an all like digital future with console games. And it really kind of just had me sitting there thinking like, if I'm having this shift in my head, like it's got to be the same for people that also don't have like data caps is the issue. And so I'm real curious to see if, and it probably won't happen. This is probably just wishful thinking on my part. But I really think if some of these publishers want to really kind of try and embrace an all digital future, they're going to have start having conversations with Comcast and the AT&Ts of the world to go, look, you're fucking up our business model. and maybe you need to, you know, maybe we need to figure out a way to make this, you know, this work. And of course we know these broadband companies are never going to get rid of data caps if it's something they can make money off of. But it was so interesting for me to be Mr. Like I'm always buying physical. And the main reason was because of those data caps. To all of a sudden have it removed, have that sort of shift where I'm like, man, fuck yeah. Like then I won't have to have these games or these cases crowding up everything. Cause I've probably got like in my basement, like 500 physical games. Like that shit is just taking up space. I'd love to not have all of that stuff. And digital's obviously the way to go. But I always ran into the data cap issue, and then there's the price issue. And then plus, I think it also really depends on who I'm buying the product from. Like, for instance, I don't think I'd have any issue going like full digital on my Xbox One because – you know, Microsoft has a refund policy, and I feel like they're relatively friendly towards moving to that sort of digital change. Yeah. I don't trust Sony simply because I feel like the minute I get a new system from them, it'll invalidate all of my old purchases, and I'll have to keep the old systems around, which, of course, you have to do anyway if you still have a PS3 sitting around or whatever the case may be. But they don't really seem to me really tied into the whole thing about we want to get you into – you know, a space where we're like, we're going to sell you all of this stuff and it's going to move forward in the same way that I think Microsoft is trying to move towards a PC style platform. Sony seems very just okay with their platforms being scattered and not having, you know, PlayStation truly just be PlayStation. It's strapped. Unified
platform.
Yeah, they're not unified at all, whereas that's the big thing that Microsoft is going for. And I think what's going to be interesting moving into the next gen is that I feel like that's going to be one of the things that really gives them a leg up. Sony has always, I felt like, kind of been playing catch up on that end for the longest time. Microsoft seems to treat their products like a unified platform, and where Sony's just like, well, you got the PS3 stuff, you got the PS4 stuff, you got the PS2 stuff that you can't really fucking play anywhere unless you're like Phil and hacking shit. Like you shouldn't have to go to that level if you've already really like paid money for these products and to keep legacy devices around. Like, I feel like we're past that point, you know what I mean? And so I feel like that's the biggest thing that Microsoft is setting themselves up for with success for next gen is doing that.
I went on a whole tirade on stream about that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, man. Like, I was looking at some of the sales because I still have my PS3 hooked up, but I don't really play it. We mainly use it as a Blu-ray drive. And even then, it doesn't get used that often because we have the 4K player on the Xbox One X. But it's like I would be much more inclined to continue to turn on my PlayStation 4 outside of the big stuff like God of War or Spider-Man if there was that legacy support in a satisfactory way that – frankly treated me like I was a valuable customer. Like, you've bought all of these things, we're going to make sure that you can continue to play them. And they just, that's just not Sony's MO. And I'm really, like I said, just, it's all this stuff's been going through my head ever since I just switched to not having a data cap. So, you know, I'm hoping with the next generation, we sort of see this turn around. Like, that's the other thing. Like, I still buy most of my games physically on Switch because I don't trust Nintendo either.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have you wanted me to rebuy Super Mario Brothers? Yeah, no, fuck y'all. You know, and it's ironic. I never thought I'd be in a position where I'd be like, man, Microsoft's the best. You know, like, it's just
they value their back catalog more.
Yeah. Which is ironic because they have the smallest out of everyone. Yep. Like, the two companies that should be like, we got the fucking shit you grew up with and all the stuff that's like pure nostalgia right in your fucking veins. Come play it. They're like,
Yeah, you know, release a PlayStation Classic that doesn't really work.
It doesn't work. You know what's funny is I didn't even go pick mine up. I just said fuck it, and I let Best Buy refund the order. Like, it just, I don't want to, especially at this point, I don't want to reward Sony for doing it half-assed.
Yeah,
I just don't. And I know eventually it'll be hackable and all that, but I know. But I mean, I'm good with not having another box under my TV that's going to play old games. I've got a computer. We've got the SNES hooked up, the, you know, the mini and all that. Like, I think I've sort of hit my limit on the classic stuff as well. Like, what I really want to see is that classic stuff come to the current hardware that I'm using, you know, and if you want to even, you know, to a certain extent, if you want to charge me a premium for that, for those kinds of games that I want to play, fine, but just make them work on what I own. Don't make me have to keep going to buy new shit. Like, it's one of the things that's unforgivable about what, and it seems like at least Nintendo is finally starting to move forward on that, like with the whole, we're not going to be producing NESs or SNES minis anymore. Maybe they'll finally pivot to giving us the stuff that we want on Switch, but I doubt it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with the PlayStation Classic. Like, it'd be great. Like, I can play a bunch of those titles on my Vita, which is great. But eventually, one of these days, my Vita is going to die, or there's going to be a battery issue, or whatever the case may be. And, like, then all of that stuff that I've bought, I'm not going to be able to play unless I have that legacy hardware somewhere. And I don't have the room for that shit anymore. So, yeah, it's like I said, all this has happened just because of switching to fiber. And I'm like, so about that digital future.
Yeah, it's, and the next step is going to be a hard drive upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird because once that switch flips for you, it's you can't go back. It's right. Irreversible.
Right, and exactly.
And now you look at stuff like Game Pass and it's like, you don't look at it like, oh, well, this game is 40 gigs. That's 40 gigs towards my data cap. You're now like, yeah, I'll give it a try. It's only going to take an hour.
Exactly. And that's the crazy part. Like, right after the Game Awards, the next day, I download like 8 things off of Game Pass. Just like, I'm going to see if I like these. Whereas I would have never done that. Because I'd have been like, I don't want to blow the data cap. I don't want to end up having to pay Comcast more money. I don't want to tell my wife that she can't stream a TV show that she wants to watch just because I want to get a game. Yeah. You know, and that's out the door now. That's out the window, which is really, really nice. And then that's the kind of thing where you start thinking about it and you're like, damn, like, maybe this truly is. Because, like, you know, it used to be at least with the physical stuff, you got something cool. Oh, I got this fancy instruction book or whatever, you know, but now it's like, you get the game, and sure, it might give you 50 gigs of data that you don't have to download, which when I had a data cap, that was really important to me. But there's going to be a fucking day one patch, and it's going to be 30 gigs. Like, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to download something anyway. The process of getting the physical item is compromised in that way because it's not – when you don't have a data cap, it's not offering you anything that's beneficial that you can't get from just doing it all digitally. And then, like I said – with me, I think I sent you guys pictures of my desk, but with like me kind of trying to redo my basement, the area where my new desk is, is where all my old games were. So now they're sitting out in the other area of my basement, just taking up space. And I'm trying to figure out what the fuck to do with them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so now the funny part is that I'm looking at a lot of the stuff that I can get digitally, and I'm going, man, I hope GameStop will do a trade-in like sale like they did. I think it was like a year ago where it was like, if you trade in like six things, they'll give you like an extra like 80% credit. I'm like, please bring something like that back, because I would totally trade in my games that I had that I know that I'm going to still want, and then just buy them digitally. Like, you know, trade all that shit in, get a bunch of credit, you know, for whatever, and then buy like, you know, Xbox cards, PlayStation cards, whatever, and yeah, then just wait for a fucking sale. So
it's weird that you say that, because Microsoft next year, they're going to start doing this. They're going to be doing a physical to digital program.
Really?
Yeah, you send them in your game. Right now they've kind of started it over at the Microsoft store, but that's going to expand to online as well. It's like you'll send them your discs. Basically tell them what games you're going to be sending them. They verify that you sent them the games that you said they did, and then they add those games to your Microsoft account.
See, that's fucking cool.
Yeah, that's no charge. Really cool. They're not going to charge you for that, because it's just going to be a conversion.
Yeah. And you know, the funny part about that too now is that I'm all like, fuck yeah, let me go like all digital. But if, like, let's say this stuff with AT&T doesn't work out, and let's say just their service is fucking garbage, then it's irrelevant anyway. But that'll be one of those things where it's going to be like, fuck, I don't want to not do this now. Yeah. You know, I want to do the digital only thing. So I'm going to see how it shakes out. Actually, I'm going to bug you probably this week, Phil, about some questions. Sure. for my network setup. But yeah, it's such an interesting thing, and like I said, that's the biggest thing that I was thinking about. Is like, I sit here with these guys and just harped and harped and harped about how physical is so important. But now that I've really taken a step back, it was like the only reason physical was important was because I didn't have an alternative. Because what it was is me buying the physical game, number one, was saving me money, because you still see the sales, like even for like these big ass titles that you're seeing out there, like the new Battlefield, it seems like every single week has gone on sale for like $30. Assassin's Creed Odyssey seems to have been hitting $30 consistently since before Black Friday. But I think the lowest that I've seen it online for like digital only, I think, has been $45. So there's still that. And so I think the other thing that's going to end up playing a big role is once these developers – this will be the last thing I say, because I know we have a lot of stuff that we want to talk about. Maybe this will – I'll put in for what we're looking forward to in like 2019. But I think maybe this – you know, what you're talking about, Phil, with like the, you know, the digital conversions and everything else like that. I think one of the things that needs to happen is that I don't know how often you guys shop, like go to stores. I know a lot of people do everything through Amazon and things like that. But, you know, if you go to any physical store, the space for physical media, for video games, for Blu-rays, everything else like that is dramatically shrinking, like consistently year over year over year. And it reminds me somewhat of like the comic book industry where some publishers were really unwilling to make like a switch over to digital. Like, I was just reading something the other day. Todd McFarlane, the guy that does Spawn, you know, you like or hate whatever it is that he does in his work. But Spawn, I think, is about to hit issue 300. So it's been around now for like 25 years. But the thing was that up until issue 250, which I think was like 3 or 4 years ago, McFarlane refused to put Spawn up on digital storefronts like Comixology and stuff like that, because he wanted to be faithful to regular comic book shops, because he was like, I want to give people a reason to go into the shop. I want to give them a reason to, you know, peruse content and all that stuff. So I thought that was actually pretty admirable. But then, you know, as comic book shops and everything and circulation overall is dying, he was like, all right, this isn't going to work. Like, I need to still be able to reach my customers, and my customers don't want to put comics in long boxes anymore. They want to just have the stuff digitally and do it that way. We've seen the same thing kind of with bookstores dying off, I think, because of availability from different places. And so I really think what's going to be interesting to see happen is in the future how the video game industry, which obviously wants to move to digital only, but has pricing that's preventative from doing that, is also going to really have to contend with the retail factor, because and these data caps. Like, yeah. I think we would have seen digital like do massive amounts of sales if people didn't have those data caps. Because think about it, if I'm going out and I'm buying a game and I'm paying $60 for it, and then I blow over my data cap, guess what? The game just cost me $10 more. Yeah. You know? And so that's kind of the thing. So I'm real curious to see what's going to happen next generation with data caps, because I think it's going to end up being a true, not just for video games, but it'll end up being a really big conflict for pretty much any type of media out there, streaming, you know, especially of any sort. Like this, the data is going to be the component that's going to get people to jump in, and the limiting of it. So it would be really interesting to see if some of these big media companies would just end up going to somebody like, you know, Comcast and going, "You're fucking us in the ass. You got to change this." If my customers aren't buying this stuff, then they're also not going to use your service to download anything. So we need to come to some sort of consensus. So yeah, that's that and Christmas present, boys. That's what I've been doing. Thinking about the digital future.
Yeah. The hard drive upgrade isn't going to be far off either.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's one thing that this whole digital thing has brought about, is much larger and much less expensive hard drives. So,
yeah, I just saw like a 10 terabyte Western Digital go on sale, I think, for like $189. That's compatible with the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, it's stupid now. So
yeah.
All right, so let's get on to the news. And we kind of touched on this earlier. Nintendo is stopping production of the NES and SNES classics. I think those kind of run their course after a while, so there's that. But it also frees up the production slots for the N64 classic that they have no plans to produce.
I don't know. Part of me thinks that the whole SNES... So do you remember when they put out the NES classic, They didn't really have anything big that they were putting out that holiday season, remember?
Right.
And so that to me, when they put out the NES Classic, sort of felt like that was their big holiday game, was the NES Classic. And so I feel like part of the reason that they even did the production that way was because that's what they intended for it to be. And I don't think, and just because, you know, it's Nintendo, they didn't realize how many people would actually want this thing, because that's how Nintendo works. And so I think it really came as a shock to them. It shouldn't have, if they were paying any attention, but it did. And then, of course, that's why we got into the situation that we did. And I think they decided to try and treat the SNES Classic the same way. And once again, they were shocked, like, wow, we can't believe that people really want this. Like, who's running things over there? Like, really? Like, what the fuck? Why wouldn't you think people would want this? So, especially at a time when we've seen, like, classic game prices spike. Yeah. You know, you're offering something that you know, definitely is polished, particularly when you compare it to like the PlayStation Classic. Oh my God, it's night and day. Like,
I wonder if Reggie has sent Sony a thank you card for making them look that good.
Right? Like, yeah, because like, you know, the SNES Classic was good. The NES Classic was good. And the stuff that they offered was pretty neat. But I think you could probably also argue it was kind of bare bones, but at least it looked nice. And then Sony was like, hold my beer. We'll show you bare bones. but yeah, like now with this whole thing with them changing it up and you know, I because this all felt to me as temporary, and that Nintendo just never intended to make this be a long term thing. But I think the part about this that sucks and has the uncertainty tied to it is, what are they going to kind of replace that with? Because we know they're not going to do a N64 classic, they said. And I would argue that seems like a really good idea not to do that, because for the most part, I think besides like the big classics that have already been re-released in multiple forms, I think the N64 is actually kind of lackluster.
Well, like here's the thing. Yeah. I mean, the N64 classic, if they were to do it, could legitimately be done with Nintendo first party alone.
Alone, yeah. They wouldn't have to pay anybody.
They wouldn't have to pay anybody. So that's one advantage. Secondly, if you look at timing-wise, if you set this up for first or second quarter of 2019, you're looking at a good spot to launch it there, because Nintendo doesn't really have much there. It's probably a temporary measure, but I do see it happening. Whenever an executive says they have no plans, you could pretty much take it as given that that's going to happen.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing about what when you have to parse what executives say.
Reggie's full of shit.
Yeah, he's full of shit anyway. But no plans usually ends up meaning that whatever it is that he's commenting on has gone past the initial planning phases. It's not a plan anymore. It's a certainty. That's the one area that people forget to parse. There are phases in the development of a project. There's the planning phase. There's the initial development. There's you know this
of course
software.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's testing, all that fun stuff. But
see, for me, I think for me the smart thing would be, because I think that they can definitely, I think they can attract people that aren't in their ecosystem with those classic products. But I think that they really should be looking at this as more of a two-pronged thing. And I think that they should be going, okay, we have a set of people that buy these products from us, and maybe they don't own a Switch. But we're going to get that money either way, because it's, you know, it's got to be pretty cheap to produce that stuff overall, those systems. I mean, not the Switch, but the classic systems. But I think the thing that they would be wise to do, and I don't have faith in Nintendo that they'll actually do it, would be to go, okay, we're, you know, all of this stuff that was on the SNES, especially if they discontinue this stuff, all the stuff that was on the SNES Classic and on the NES Classic, we are going to make it available for you to buy with our account system and all of that stuff. I don't feel like Nintendo is smart enough to do that, but that's absolutely the way that they should go, because if they truly are going to not produce a Nintendo 64, then I think the best move from a business sense would be to put those on the Switch and go, look, if you are interested in our back catalog of stuff, if you like this Nintendo 64 stuff, if you like the Super Nintendo, if you like the Nintendo, just the old school shit, come buy a Switch. And then you might find a bunch of other games that you also like. But we have a bunch of robust old titles if this is all you're interested in. And then they get people in the door at that $300 price point. And then they have a customer that can return to them and buy more things. What they're doing right now doesn't do that. And I feel like that might be why they're saying, we're not going to – this isn't going to be a thing that we continue to produce. But to your point, Phil – they've looked at the logistics of it. I don't think we'll see like a GameCube classic or something like that, but you know, who knows? I mean, this could be something that totally continues to just drive money to Nintendo, but I feel like they're also doing that at the expense of continuing to expand their customer base, who like, or folks like us who are already in the fucking pool and would be like, look, we would give you money for this stuff, but you won't give it to us, so we just rather hack your shit.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to do something like, instead of, you know, selling a physical thing like an NES Classic for $60, if they go on the Switch eShop and it's like NES Classic Pack $60,
right,
and you get all of those 30 games in it, that's kind of a no-brainer.
Right, and it would be so much cheaper for them. I mean, at that point, it's pure profit for them. That's the part of this that doesn't make any goddamn sense, is there's no reason that they couldn't have done both. Because they would have made money either way. You would have the people that were like – you'd have people like us who I think would be like, I love the physical box and I love the controller and I love all this other stuff. This is great. And then we would probably still be the same people that buy it on the fucking Switch anyway.
Yeah, basically.
You know, and so. I think there's a lot of gamers out there that are like that. And I don't know why they're not taking advantage of it. So maybe if they are truly saying, you know, we're not going to do a Nintendo 64 Classic. And I think there was something about Reggie was saying, you know, they're really trying to take the Switch eShop more seriously. You know, maybe that'll be the way that they pivot. But I don't have faith in that, because Nintendo's going to Nintendo.
Yep, they certainly are. So we wait with bated breath, as they say. Okay, so I guess move on to our next story, and this one just appeared in the rundown while I wasn't looking. So Sega is partnering with Forever Entertainment for Panzer Dragoon 1 and 2 remakes. Okay, take my money.
Yes.
Yep, this is the publisher that worked with Square Enix for Fear Effects Sedna, which was made by a different studio, I think Sushi Games. But yeah, they're saying it's going to be out by the end of next year. Yeah, it's pretty neat to see Sega at least doing like they did with EaseNet, and to get Shenmue 3 made, sort of partnering with somebody else because they don't want to do it, I guess.
Yeah, it's also interesting that we're starting to dip into the Saturn catalog.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, which is something.
About damn time.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a pretty interesting pool of games there, and okay, most of them stayed in Japan. That's a kind of a problem, but yeah, they would need to localize
a lot. It's a very solvable problem.
Yeah, it is a solvable problem. Just ask the community. They'll translate it for you.
Right. The ironic part is Sega has been the one company out of all the ones that we've been talking about that we haven't mentioned that seems to have actually said, we take our back catalog seriously, and we're going to release it a bunch of different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that all the time.
There's a brand new Sega Ages line that just launched on the Switch that's fantastic, too.
Yeah. Are those the ones developed by M2? And
I think so.
Yeah, so yeah, you expect good things because those guys know their shit.
Yeah, they really do. Thank God for M2.
The story of M2 is amazing, if you ever heard that one.
I have not.
No? It started with Gauntlet.
Okay.
So there were a couple guys in Japan. They had an X68000. They wanted to play Gauntlet. So they ported Gauntlet Arcade to the X68000, and then they were like, well, okay, this is pretty good, so let's send it out and see if anybody wants it. They sent it over to, I think it was Atari Tengen at the time, and they were basically saying, they said, well, okay, if we're going to release this on the Mega Drive, let's do that, but we want to add all of these other features that will make this a much more interesting game. So they, a few months later, got back, and Gauntlet 4 came back. Which, if you've ever played, is actually one of the best Gauntlet games in existence. So that came out, and that was the start of M2 as a studio.
Huh.
Yeah. And since then, well, they've been doing stuff with the Mega Drive hardware, and they're kind of experts at it, because they sort of know it inside and out, because they developed it for it on the hardware level. So, yeah, that's a random factoid that... to be worth
good one.
Noting. Yeah. But yeah, Panzer Dragoon 1 and 2, they're going to be remade. They don't say remastered per se, but yeah, I wonder how they're going to be handling this.
So from the sound of it, developed from scratch.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what they're planning to do. Because I think they're also publishing the Fear Effect remake that is being made for, I think, next year as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, so
this is more of a Crash Insane Trilogy type of redo. So
I'd imagine a much smaller budget, though.
Yeah,
you don't need an enormous budget for something like that.
No, yeah. Well, hopefully these do well, and they do Saga as well, because getting a copy of that is a little bit on the painful side right now. Yeah. Anyway.
Can you imagine the salt from Collectors?
I relish the salt.
Oh, God. It's delicious to think about.
Yeah. Okay, so next bit of random news. John Romero is apparently discovered a Doom editor and is going to be doing a Doom mod that he's going to be releasing in early 2019, called Sigil, which he's calling kind of a spiritual successor to Doom, with his own vision of it, anyway.
I'm in.
That'll be interesting to see, because when you look at the way that the Doom, the original Doom, Doom 2, and like the Ultimate Doom stuff went, and then Romero went on his own way and, kind of had his little problem with Daikatana. But when you look at like Doom 3, I think Doom 3 really lacked stuff that made Doom feel like Doom. And I think that was because you had Carmack working on his own with his team rather than also having, Romero there. So like, say what you want about the guy, but like, I think having those two together, you had the technical side, and then you just had the really, the bombastic side that made Doom as cool as it was and as groundbreaking as it was. So, I think hopefully, I would say it's been a long time since Romero, since Daikatana. So, maybe we won't get ads like, John Romero's about to kick your ass. And, he'll do a game that's interesting. So I'm very curious to see what that's going to be like.
Yeah, it's really weird because he's not actually ever really left the industry. He's just kind of been on, the periphery of it.
Right.
He's been doing mobile games, and then he spent a stint doing Facebook games and stuff. And then he announced Black Room, and I don't know where the hell that game is at the moment. Supposedly reunited with Adrian Carmack to work on that. Yeah. And now he's just doing this. So I guess this is nice, maybe an interesting side project for him, just to get back to basics.
Which, would be interesting to get him on the show.
I'm trying, believe me.
It's neat that they're doing a physical version with limited run games.
Yep.
So $40 version that includes a 60 gigabit USB drive shaped like a floppy disk.
Yep.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Okay, so now the whole thing about physical media that we were talking about earlier is just like goes out the window, because I want this.
Right, exactly. That's the other thing, you got to give reasons to buy the physical version, right? Like other, because it's just bits otherwise, unless you're getting something cool. That sounds fucking cool. My kid thinks that's the save icon. I had to show him what a fucking floppy drive actually is, like what a floppy disk looks like. He goes, holy shit. Like he didn't say shit. But was like, because all the kids his age just know that as the save icon.
Yeah. And they're going to do a $166 like special edition. Includes an art print, collectible coin, a Peter statue of Romero's own head on a spike.
Okay, that's
from the end of Doom 2. Nice.
Yeah, I think it's going to be
the tear until the job's done, boys.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be his actual head. So I think it owns his digital head from before.
Hmm. Well, yeah, from the end of Doom 2.
And, yeah. Okay, yeah. They got a picture of that floppy disk in it. Yeah, somebody just took a floppy disk and put the USB port on the side of it.
Hey, that's fine. I might make it difficult to actually put in some USB ports, but yeah, we'll see. Should also point out that if you don't want to buy it, it's actually going to be a free download. So there's that too. I'm going to play this. I mean, this is going to be one of those things where I want to see if his philosophies of game design still work in this day and age.
So, oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah. So we'll wait and see. He said February or March 2019 was when it's going to be coming out.
Cool.
So let's we'll give you more info when that comes out. Okay, so let's get on to probably the facepalm moment of the week. Capcom deciding that they're going to be bringing sponsored content to Street Fighter V in the form of loading screen ads, costume placements, and I think there was one other thing that they were doing in there.
No, that's about it.
Yeah. So that's a thing that they're doing, and apparently the community is not amused.
And this was the response to a community complaint, ironically. So before anyone goes for the torches and pitchforks, let me clarify exactly what this is. And then after that, you can go for your torches and pitchforks as you see fit. So fans have been complaining since Arcade Edition dropped early this year that that Capcom had sort of scaled back the availability of fight money apart from the 50 per ranked win that you get.
Uh-huh.
And so they're giving you the option of enabling ads on the versus screen, which they've clarified, and I've tested this, it does not make any difference in terms of load time. It doesn't add anything. It just puts a different picture up besides the usual loading versus screen. And you can get a little bit of fight money every match for that. You can also wear an ad-enabled version of your character's costume, which will give you fight money for various things. And you can opt out of this. It's not compulsory by any means. It's just another way to get fight money if you so desire it. And it's something that they're also enabling at tournaments so they can get some extra revenue that way. So you can go into the options menu and disable this. The game will play exactly like it always did with no changes to fight money as it was or anything. It's just there as another way that you can get fight money to get your extra costumes or whatever it is you want to buy. So there's that out of the way. Is it an ideal solution to the fight money question? Probably not. But
this seems like a way of just sleazily injecting ads into a game that they broke to begin with.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no excuse for this. I read something the other day where somebody said they floated an idea. They were a developer. They floated an idea about having ads come up during the loading screen. And what? Like, we're
there now.
We're at the thing that kills me about this.
Well, we've been there for a while.
I know we have. But Pat, help me out here, because I think we both maybe close to this in a way that maybe other people aren't, but the problem with something like this and all of this in general, right, this monetization thing, is because it's not done because this is what is needed to help the game or the developer thrive. You're not seeing that money reinvested into anything. It's just going to the top. Like, I think if there was something where, for like, say, Street Fighter players, if they were like, look, you're going to have to view these fucking ads so we can keep Capcom Cup going, and we're going to give you, you know, not just the fight money, but, you know, you're going to get characters free. That's the trade-off. Then I think people would go for it. But all this screams about is we just found another way to get someone to give us money by stealing your eyeballs. And we're going to give you a slight compensation that's really not worth shit for that. And even having the option to opt out of it doesn't make it any less scummy, right? Like, am I? That's how I feel. Am I crazy?
No, I totally agree with that.
I don't know. I think the opt out is an out, really.
It's like you're treating the symptom and not really the problem.
I'm just saying that people wanted a way to get more fight money. This is a way to get more fight money. And if you don't like it, you have you can completely wash your hands of it. So it's not a hill I'm willing to die on, but it's not a great look either.
No, it really isn't. They set Street Fighter V up with this particular system, and at the beginning they said everything in the game will be purchasable with fight money. That was, you know, what they set it up as. And then they slowly started taking away ways for you to earn that fight money. And they just kind of eroded the economy to the point where that particular method is
no longer... You're either good at ranked or you're not getting paid.
Exactly. So it's basically they've made it, the entire game, a complete grind for anybody who wants to go that route. You know, it's either, okay, make Street Fighter V a completely free-to-play game, and well, then this monetization makes sense. I think that's where it's going next. Yeah.
This is terraforming for a free-to-play version.
Yeah, yep. They've been kind of, whenever they put it on sale, like that original version, the base version, goes on sale for like $10. And it's like, at some point, you're probably better off making that free, offering the arcade stuff as, you know, like a $10 or $20 buy-in.
Yep.
And
I think that's where we're going with it.
On top of that.
Yeah.
I think
ads are going to be non-optional on a free-to-play version eventually.
Well, yeah.
I'm still wondering when the way they do ads in mobile games comes into consoles, where you watch an ad, you get like double money for an hour or whatever.
Oh God, don't give them any ideas.
Because if you could like watch one ad in like Street Fighter V, and you get for your next hour, you know, double fight money for whatever you get. Mm. It's like, would you do that?
But didn't they kind of sort of do that in Street Fighter V with the Force trailers?
The what?
Well, the character promos that they would like roll in every now and then. Don't remember those?
Well, I remember character reveal trailers, but I don't remember them being forced or anything.
Yeah, well, I remember them happening in the game, and wasn't able to skip them, so that was interesting.
I can honestly say I've never run into those.
Yeah. Well, I think they stopped doing them after a while. I did it during Season 1. Like, there were... Right as the character was being, like, dropped onto the store, when you first logged into the game, you get the trailer for the character that just dropped.
Yeah, I never experienced that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the ad stuff kind of goes with the way that, like, Call of Duty has, like, oh, buy, you know, cans of Monster Energy or whatever, and you get, like, double XP for an hour or whatever. It's like, you know, just skip the forcing people to buy, you know, junk food. Let them watch an ad. People want to put ads in Call of Duty or whatever, because those are big, huge games.
Yeah, but the thing with that is that Monster and, you know, the Totino's Pizza Roll guys and everybody are paying those companies to even have that kind of thing. Like, well, what if we give you money and then, you know, your customers buy our shit and then you give them like a free XP boost that won't amount to anything because your game's so fucking grindy anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's win-win for the publishers because it's just more money.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you can bring in new people, because like a lot of mobile ads, besides being like other mobile games, you get like Hulu and these other like streaming services and such that get their ads on there, and some TV shows and such. It's like always surprised nobody's really jumped into that yet, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that the console market is quite ready for that step yet.
Yeah.
Especially if there's a charge up front. I think there'd probably be riots if that happened.
Yeah, there's tons of free-to-play games. I don't think any of them have done that.
No, not yet.
Especially ones where they're not really selling anything in it.
Yeah, to bring it back to Street Fighter V, I think the free-to-play version is probably, as Pat said, inevitable. It was actually free on last week.
The Capcom Cup.
Yeah, so yeah, you can download it on Steam and play it, and all of the stuff is there. This is a thing that will probably happen. I think the sponsored stuff is, it's just a thing that we're going to have to deal with. But really, I think Capcom really needs to just reevaluate that whole thing and maybe, I don't know, sell it as a game. Maybe Street Fighter V Turbo with everything and, you know, just everything bundled in. It might not be a bad idea at this point because it's a little... have you tried like getting caught up if you're just like...
I think that'll be next gen.
Yeah.
So. Well, getting caught up is easy because also on sale right now is Season 1, 2, and 3 pack with the game itself for half off. So,
and I think all of the
They always do sales like that.
Hmm.
Now, if you require all the costume packs, that's your malfunction. But as far as getting caught up on characters that actually make a substantive difference in terms of how the game plays... getting caught up is not difficult because they have sales like this all the time, and every year they seem to adjust it for the current season.
Hmm. I mean, I think these kinds of things are going to have to lead to an overall discussion about how the industry works, because I think it's very much a schism between, like, okay, these developers feel like they need to make more money to maintain their companies and everything else like that. And I know the one thing that's really stopping them is that they just don't want to raise the price of a game over $60 because they definitely have data that people aren't going to pay for it. Now, you can throw in the extra shiny shit like season passes and everything to get over that $60 mark. But I also think that we're kind of at a point where a lot of these game companies, if they're looking for how to set things up, you know, for long tail survival, you can't over monetize your customers. Because the minute that they feel that they're being taken advantage of, they're going to leave. That's the problem Blizzard is having right now. And Blizzard was a company 5 years ago that was practically unimpeachable in the games industry. And now people are just fleeing from them. The customers, that is, because of the moves that they're making that seem to be built more around how can we extract as much money as possible from people, as opposed to we're going to make a really fun game that's just going to sell itself. And I mean, like, I look at something like Assassin's Creed, both of them. I'll tell you this. One of the things, Origins might be one of the best games ever made, but I don't think I'll ever know, because the amount of monetization shoved into that game was nothing short of sickening. I would go into my options menu and it would hit me with an ad for Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And then I'd have to hit a button to acknowledge that I'd seen the ad. And it's like, what? If you're going to do this, what did I pay you for?
Yeah.
You know? So. And so I think that if these companies are going to be focused on a game that's going to, you know, be multiplayer and, you know, what they need to figure out the best way to do is, like in a Street Fighter V situation, is how do you make that pool as big as possible so people keep playing? Well, one of the routes that you can go is free to play. But then you also have to make it so, you know, you as a company make money, but your customers also don't feel like they're getting fucked in the ass. And the thing that is so bothersome to me about all of this stuff that we see is that we see developers shoving free-to-play monetization schemes in full-priced games. And you got to pick one or the other. Either you're giving away the game for free, and then you're doing the ads and you're doing all of this stuff, and then that's what's expected. Okay, fine. But you can't charge somebody $40 or $60 out of the gate, charge it for DLC and everything else like that, and then also have, well, hey, guess what? We're going to show you ads and things like that. Like you, and that's where the consumer goes, fuck this. It's not worth it to me. And I think you also see that with the way that they handled the launch of Street Fighter V. We know that they put it out because they wanted to get it on the tournament scene. It wasn't worth what they asked for it from the outset if you weren't somebody that played in tournaments. And I think especially in the fighting game scene, you have companies like NetherRealm who are bringing really good single player experiences overall to the fighting game community, and trying to get people into it that way as well, where it's like, hey, we have this really robust single player mode, but you still might want to try playing against somebody because we're going to, you know, kind of teach you how to play this stuff. One of the things that Capcom has failed at entirely as far as attracting new people to play Street Fighter is there's nothing in the game that really shows you how to play. Now, both Pat and I and everybody on this podcast are pretty old school when it comes to that. Like, we all went to the arcades and we got our asses kicked, and that's how you learn. But the newer, younger folks that are getting into this kind of thing, they're not doing that. And they need to have something that's going to show them how to get into this kind of thing. It's the same issue that Blizzard has with WoW. Like, if you jump in, you get hit with all of these systems upon systems upon systems, and you have a community that's relatively toxic towards new people asking questions. And then what happens is those people that would be paying customers get in there, have a really bad time, try to talk to the community, have a really shitty time during that, and they go, fuck it, I don't want to play anymore. And that, you couple that along with, I just put in a bunch of money into this because I wanted to get into it. So you're looking at a group of customers that are kind of being pushed out by the toxicity of their own community, and they lost money in the process. Like, no, that's a recipe for disaster. So I think that these companies, especially going forward, are going to have to tackle how they deal with monetization, but also if they have a multiplayer component, how they're going to deal with the toxicity. And if you're going to really, you want longevity in your game, you have to build in systems into the game where if the game is deep enough that it's also going to teach them that level of depth, you know, not hold their hand the entire way, but here are some things that could happen. And here's what this might look like if you get good enough at this. This is what you want to aspire to. And then I think that you'll start retaining those customers. But if you create the situation, as I think Capcom and a lot of other companies have, where it's just, you are just eyeballs for ads, and an open wallet, that's all we want to do with you, and then we're going to waste your time if you're not giving us extra money. I think that's why we're in these situations that we're in.
Yeah.
I hope they don't get too good at teaching people how to play the games, because I got a little thing called World Warriors that kind of relies on them not doing
that. Oh, yeah. No, I think anytime you have a game that has a large level of depth to it, you're always going to have these websites that are going to go, here's how – this stuff is played at like the high end. I think that's unavoidable. And World Warriors is a fantastic website, by the way. But
thank you.
I think you definitely need to help get those people to the middle, you know, where you get them comfortable with concepts, they can recognize much higher level play, and then that's something that they aspire to. And then they go out and they look at the resources that are available. But I think right now, a lot of these experiences are tailored much more towards frustration and extraction of money. And that doesn't create the longevity that these people are looking for, that these companies are looking for. And then they're the ones that do this shit, like sneak ads in there, or, you know, decry, we can't afford to keep making this stuff. Well, like, you're not doing anything to attract people. That's the problem.
Yeah. I'm going to hold NetherRealm up as an example of how you do it right. Because the recent updates, it's been a few months.
Oh, Ed's been doing fantastic work.
Yeah, that new Injustice 2 training mode is fantastic. It will literally show you all the concepts, just bring you from complete newbie up to, I guess, you know, if you follow that and you really go through it, you'd be at least a mid-tier player by the time you're done with that. So, you know, this is how you do it.
And you know MK11's going to follow suit.
Yeah. The community has been kind of calling Capcom out on the shenanigans. Yipes did so on stream, as you mentioned.
As a commentator. Storm Kubo picked one of the CPT advertising costumes for Abigail. And Yipes said, yeah, every time he lands Crush Counter Fierce, he gets 4 fight money. And if he puts that money in a trust, by 2025, he might be able to afford a character. And we'll see if he's back on stream today. for top eight, but
yeah,
that was an amusing moment, to say the least, from one of the more entertaining guys in the fighting game community all around.
that was on the Capcom stream,
on the official stream. That was just fantastic.
Yeah, so there's that. In other news, yeah, we'll probably see the reveal of season four today.
Yes.
So
I'm expecting good things. The game itself is in a really good place, and they've got, I think, all of the mandatory characters pretty much covered. So now it's like anything they do is just going to be bonus, you know, interesting, especially with a system like Street Fighter V has, where they can really tailor things to the character rather than trying to force a character into a pre-existing system that they may or may not mesh with.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing what's coming tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the reason that I'm so critical of Street Fighter V is because I love it so much.
Yes.
So, you know.
And they knocked it out of the park with Season 3.
Yeah. So, anyways. All right, so let's move on. And because we're going to run long. There's no stopping that today.
Last show of the year.
Yeah, we may as well just go for it. February 15th is turning out to be a really crowded day for gaming. Metro Exodus just dropped itself into that slot as well.
So that party just moved up a week earlier then?
Yep.
And then being like, oh, we're cool here.
Yeah. So now we're there. I guess they didn't want to go right up against Anthem. So they got a week, a head start, I guess, but they're dropping into a crowded slot.
Just be them not wanting to potentially get swallowed by the wave that's coming the week earlier.
Yeah.
Like, we might as well be here and die on this than wait and hope there's still money to go around.
They're sending it out to die either way.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Metro Exodus is one of those games that I think will do well on its own. For one thing,
it appeals to a very specific kind of people.
Yeah. Yeah, survival type aesthetic, post-apocalyptic. It's like Fallout 76 if it was good, except this one's not multiplayer. So
Euro as fuck.
Yeah, so it's very Euro. I'm sure there will be the few traces of the Euro jank at launch, because there always is.
Yeah,
but it's one of those things where the developers they never stop developing it. It just keeps going and going. So yeah, if you've not played the Metro games, they're fantastic, and yeah, well worth it. Is there much to say about this one other than it's just a release date, so it's, I don't really
it's a thing.
Got much? Yep, the thing. What's also a thing is that the Kingdom Hearts 3 was leaked. Nomura is telling fans not to spoil it for people.
Well, you know he puked.
Yeah.
He had to have puked.
I guess what this proves is that Kingdom Hearts 3 actually exists.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing. As far as the spoilers, well, we could go through the entire story right here and now, just for everybody's... we're not going to do that.
Well, let's show the... let's go.
No, we're not
going
to do that.
The weird thing is, I don't know how many people would actually understand it.
Yeah, that's...
We haven't played much of the previous games.
Yeah. Even if you have, you probably still wouldn't understand it, because it's their mess. But yeah, this happened. I guess the question I have is it our job to kind of keep the game industry secrets? I mean,
no.
No,
it's not.
I mean, this stuff came out. It's going to be on the internet now. If you're a fan who is offended by this kind of thing and don't want to be spoiled, well, I guess you probably
want to
maybe stay off of YouTube for a little while, at least until the game comes out. Yeah. Because chances are you're probably going to run into spoilers, and even though spoilers don't actually, reduce the enjoyment you'll get out of a game, people still think so. So,
yeah. Maybe just use YouTube in incognito mode. So there are no traces of it, knowing, like, you like Kingdom Hearts. Here's some Kingdom Hearts videos that say directly who dies and whatever goes on.
Yeah.
That's what YouTube likes to do, is just shit on everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and give you conspiracy theory videos for no apparent reason.
Well, hey, you watch these NASA videos. How would you like to know that the moon is moon landing was faked?
Yeah. I got a video the other day of it was a flat earthers conference.
Oh God!
Why are you showing me this? So anyways, that's neither here nor there.
I would like to know how many people are there.
Yeah.
As like a lot of people, or if it's like a room full.
I don't know. I didn't click on it, but it looked like, you know, the thumbnail seemed like there was quite a few people there. So
that is disturbing.
Yeah. So moving on to other news, the ZeniMax Oculus suit has finally come to a settlement. Yeah, money changed hands. That's basically what this is going to boil down to.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
And probably not what the initial settlements were. It was like $500 million, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what ended up happening?
Well, they just settled. They didn't say anything about what the terms were.
Didn't disclose the details.
They just said,
yeah, okay, we're good.
They basically said, we are pleased that a settlement has been reached and are fully satisfied by the outcome. While we dislike litigation, I don't know about that. We will always vigorously defend against any infringement or misappropriation of our intellectual property by third parties. And Facebook said, we're pleased to put this behind us and continue building the future of VR.
Yeah. Okay, that's a whole lot of PR speak, which doesn't actually say a whole hell of a lot. But
nope.
It basically does mean that at least Oculus can get back to work doing what they were doing.
Oculus,
maybe things. Bethesda will put out their VR stuff on the Oculus store.
Yeah. Yeah. Doom VFR, Fallout VR, all that stuff. Yeah. Be nice if it was just ubiquitous. Would also be nice if we end up with a unified VR platform at some point, but, you know, we can dream.
Not bloody likely.
Yeah. So that's good to hear. And, yeah, I definitely need a PSVR in my life now that I have Tetris Effect, so this is a thing that will happen probably sooner rather than later. So shall we move on to the last story before we talk about 2018?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Nier Automata Game of the Year Edition is out.
Game of the Yorha edition.
Yeah. And, they asked Yoko Taro to say a few words. That may have been a mistake.
Yeah, he said some words.
Yeah. So he wrote up, Square Enix has asked me for a comment to mark the announcement of the Nier Automata Game of the Yorha edition. Now that you mention it, Nier Automata was first released on the 23rd of February 2017 in Japan, 7th of March 2017 in America, on the 10th of March 2017 in Europe. I know something bizarre and fascinating about these numbers. If you write these dates out in long form as 2017-0223, 2017-0307, and 2017-0310, then add all three numbers together, you get 60510840. If you take that total, split the digits into two down the middle, making 6051 and 0840, then subtract the second number from the first, unbelievably you get 5211. That's right, a number completely devoid of all meaning. Just like life, really, isn't it? Over and out.
I worry about him sometimes.
Well, I don't think he's going to be asked to speak on behalf of Square Enix again. there's that.
I don't know about that. They still use that. Like, okay, yeah, this fits everything. Let's just do this.
Yeah, it's definitely something he would do, and, well, did do. Mm-hmm. So that's great, and Nier Automata is just weird, so it definitely fits.
Just go with it?
Yeah, just run with it. It's nice to have the weird in the game industry still. It's not just all, you know, crappy AAA stuff that we're doing. I like Nier Automata. I wish I have gotten to play it so far, but it's one of those games that is in my backlog, they say. Yeah, so anyway.
A backlog is something to be proud of, though, I've come to decide over the years.
Yeah, I like the backlog. It's all the games that I will probably leave to my kids when I die. So maybe they'll finish them, I don't know.
Well, to me it's always been like, I know that the day will come that the game industry will just piss me off to the point that I can no longer support it in good conscience. And when that day comes, I'm still going to need games to play.
Hmm.
Because I'm not just going to quit playing video games. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. So you can have a nice stockpile of them ready
for
you. Exactly. Yeah. All right. So let's wrap up the year then with 2018. Guess we can start off with... this isn't specifically game of the year, but just our favorite games of this year. Yeah, well, we will get to that. But just our favorite games of the year and why we like them and just any thoughts we have on them. I want to kind of start with Horizon Chase Turbo because it's not my number one game, but it's one of those games that it was the first game this year where I felt happy playing it.
It has soul.
Yes. You could tell that this game was developed by people who gave a shit.
Yes.
I mean, there were a couple of issues here and there. Like, it did feel a little bit like a mobile port because it still had that, you know, some vestiges of the auto steer in there, which, you know, it take it or leave it. It's one of those things there. It would be nice if it wasn't there, but I could live with it. You know, Barry Leach's amazing soundtrack really adds a lot to that game. And it's just so much fun to play. Although I will say that once you start getting into the later portions of the game...
It becomes a real ball breaker.
Oh, dear God. The fuel requirements start to get brutal.
Yeah, it's not just a nothing mechanic there to be there. They use it.
Oh, yeah.
They will wield it like a bludgeon.
They've got a trophy for passing a checkpoint when you've run out of fuel. Well, finishing a race after you've run out of fuel, which is very difficult to do.
Get it early on. Just do yourself a favor.
Yeah. So, there's that. I really enjoyed that game immensely. Still turn it on, play it every now and then. Really hope they do some more expansions on that.
Or just go to Horizon Chase 2, even.
Yeah, I think that will probably happen. I mean, the game has come out now on...
all of the things.
It's out on everything. Yeah. PS4, Xbox One, PC, Switch. It's wherever you want to play that, you can. And mobile, I guess. No, the Turbo version is not mobile. The original one is, but still. Great game. It made me happy. And we got a really great guest on the podcast. As a result,
yeah, we got to have him back sometime.
Yeah, yeah, I'm still in touch with him, so talk to him regularly. Yeah, he's thread ripping now, so that's the thing that's happening. Just built his audio workstation, and it's a beast. What else have we got going on? Well, I can't not talk about Tetris Effect and just how much of an amazing Tetris experience this is. Control-wise, it's pretty much spot on. It's everything I expect it to be. I'm not having to fight the controls. The way that the game handles lock delay and all that stuff is pretty much perfect, I would say. It's as good of anything as I've ever experienced with that series. What else can I say about it? It's just... Tetsuya Mizuguchi doing Tetris and doing it well. The music, the visuals, it all really just melds into a game that, I don't say this often, but, you know, finishing that the journey mode in Tetris Effect.
Oh, Metamorphosis.
Borderline, Metamorphosis. Have you gotten through it?
Yes.
That was like a borderline spiritual experience getting through that. It takes some real talent, some real creativity to make moments like that happen. So we cannot discount the talent of Enhance and Resonair and all the people there that made that game happen. It is, without a doubt, for me, my favorite game of the year. So that's those are the two that I want to spotlight.
Nice. For me, I think the obvious one is Octopath Traveler. We had a whole special about it, and it's just one of those games I can keep going back to because even once you finish all of the character storylines, you still have an almost MMO volume of side quests that you can go through. And yeah, it just it, the game never runs out. And that Asano Studio managed this in as short a time as they did. I really think that Tomoya Asano himself should be in charge of Square Enix's RPG studios altogether, because this is what they need to be making. We're looking for another game to talk about, and I'd probably bring up NHL 19 just because it's so rare that you see physics enhancements and community features come together in such a complete way as they did here. And, you know, if you're maybe curious about learning the game of hockey, or if you're a perhaps a lapsed fan, or just someone who doesn't know if hockey video gaming is for you, this is the one to kind of dip your toe into, because Rammer and his team have made sure that there is a brand of hockey inside of this box for you to latch onto and appreciate. So those are my picks.
All right. How about you, Chris? You got a couple that I like?
Yeah, these aren't going to be my top picks, but I definitely have been putting together a list of like games I'm considering putting on the list. And I guess I'll highlight a couple of them that are on, at least in consideration right now. Donut County, a game that I have tons of screenshots of things in the Trashopedia and still look at it on occasion, just crack up at some of the writing.
It astounded me that Keita Takahashi was not involved in that game in any way.
Yeah, it's very much a game that's a love letter to that, as well as just a stupid humor. It's really, really funny just looking through the Trashopedia. Yeah, I'm looking at a couple screenshots here right now. It's a funny one for a bee house. It's a bees rent apartments from their mom. It's like, yep, that's what that is. You know, pine cones make no sense. It's not a good fruit. Yeah, it's just has lots of great stupid lines, and that's a game that's I just laugh anytime I think about that game. And yeah, that's I think it's just about to come out on Xbox One, so people there should definitely check that out if they've not played it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably also throw Astrobot Rescue Mission. It's a platformer that just really works well in PSVR in a way that you probably would not have expected when you thought about what would work well in VR, especially with two of the big PSVR games this year being kind of third-person games, especially ones where you're kind of the camera looking down upon these smaller characters with Moss and Astrobot Rescue Mission.
Yeah.
That's... And that game just controls so well, has a great soundtrack. The Underground Cave song just still sticks in my head all the time. And it's really a joy and really one of the best platformers to come out this entire generation, whether it's TV or PSVR or whatever.
Yeah.
Which may be saying more about the state of platformers on this generation.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really well-done game and... definitely deserves more credit than even it's been getting, because people only put it in here in the VR corner when they're talking about like year-end stuff. And I would say it actually deserves to be considered overall amongst every game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a game that people should be checking out if they have not already, or just grab that bundle with the headset and all that. Get you going right away. Yep. And I'll throw another one in here, Return of the Obra Dinn. It's a game that is very weird up front. You are this insurance adjuster working for, I forget what the company is called. You're working for an insurance company that's basically has gotten this ship called the Obra Dinn back after it was essentially abandoned because everybody on board died. And they're trying to they send you out to figure out what the hell happened here. Do we have to pay any money? And who has to get it? And so you have to go through And the initial stuff is on this mutiny that happens at the very end with the final people that are still alive taking on the captain and all that, and they end up all killing each other. And so you're like, okay, we've got to look at these bones and use your magic pocket watch that lets you see what happened to this person at the moment of their death. And then you sort of work your way backwards through these different scenarios and see, like, oh, this whole thing was just fucked at a certain point, because there's shit going on left and right. Then you go into some of these other points, you're like, oh, yeah, these people brought it on themselves. And then you're just weaving all these stuff together, and I've gotten a good bit of the people figured out, so you have to get them figured out in threes, figure out who they are, what their name is, what their position, no, yeah, you figure out by figuring out their position, all that sort of stuff. You figure out how they died, and maybe who did it. At some points, it's not, you don't have to figure out the specific who, if it's a creature or something like that. But yeah, there's, and you get that in three, and it's like, gives you a little good, like, confirmation animation. Oh, good job. You got in these three, and now figure out the rest. And you use it just by looking at them, where you're like, oh, this part of the crew or the people that are on board are Chinese. Okay, it's going to be one of these, you know, four people. Or you hear them talking a little bit around that. You're like, oh, they said a name. You know, they said John. Like, how many Johns are on here? You know, or they just mention, oh, you know, talking about their wife. And it's like, oh, okay, there's people that have similar names that should be on here. You know, using a lot of just thinking and detective skills, sort of figuring out, okay, based on these clues, this person is likely to be this. And sort of going through this whole story and realizing, yeah, there's a lot of shit that went on here. And trying to figure it all out is just, it's a real joy. And it's a very weird game you would not have expected to be as good as it is. Because it's just not, you never think like, oh, an insurance adjuster game, that's going to be real a hit.
Yeah.
Especially one where, you know, it's kind of not really monochromatic, but it's trying to emulate like old PC style graphics.
Yeah, it's one bit kind of like, you know, black and white ish style.
Yeah, and they have a few different themes for that. So there are different like color themes, like a typical like tan brownish kind of thing. Some are like blue, purple, that sort of stuff. And it has a really striking style as well that just really stands out from anything else that came out this year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's one of those games that people should really check out, and I hope it does come to consoles. A little bit more quickly than Papers, Please did to the Vita. So that was like a few years it took.
Yeah, it's finally out now.
Yep. Jeez. And it's on PS Plus for this month, so that's also worth checking out. But yeah, it's those are some of the really most striking games that I saw this year.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll get to trends that we want to see die. Because 2018 had quite a few of them for me. I'll name a couple here. First of all, the trend where developers will, now this is mostly a publisher issue, they will wait for reviews of a game to come out, and then they'll wait a month, and then introduce microtransactions in after all the reviews have been published. This needs to stop. I think it's dishonest. I think it's disingenuous. And it makes me look at games like, I have to look at them I basically have to dock them about a half a star or a star just in principle at this point, because I know they're going to be dropping microtransactions in, and I have to account for that ahead of time.
Yeah. Red Dead Redemption 2 just did that.
Yep. With the online.
Yep.
Of course, that we kind of knew was going to happen. So it doesn't make it any better, though. So that's one thing for me. The other thing is the whole Battle Royale. Everything has to have a Battle Royale, really does need to stop. This is a problem with the industry as a whole. It's like when something is successful, everybody jumps on it. So you end up with all kinds of copycats. And you know, we saw this with fighting games. We saw it with platformers. It's just endemic of the industry. You know, it's if you want to stand out now in the industry, it's like not having a battle royale mode is probably a good way to go. So there's that. And one other thing that I should probably mention. Really, you don't need so many wheel spins and just random stuff cluttering up the map. I played Forza Horizon 4. I was like, God, what is all this crap?
Yeah.
I mean,
especially if you did any like the mixer grinding stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you got 70 spins. Like, oh.
Oh, it's like, yeah, okay, I have to click on it every single time. Oh, seriously? Yeah. It's like, deep down, I know there's a really amazing game there, but I don't want to play it with all this other crap that's in it.
Yeah.
It's like... so that's my trend. The over-Fortnite-ification of games. So, yeah. Who wants to go next?
I can go.
Okay.
Like one of the big pet peeves I've had is the Super Special Edition Early Access thing that publishers have been doing for the last couple of years, but has kind of hit the majority of them this year, where, hey, if you spend, you know, a ton of money on the game, getting the higher special editions, you get to play early. Because, thank you for putting all of your money in ahead of time before you really know what you're getting with the season passes or whatever else is coming with it that you probably don't really want right away anyway. And sort of trying to essentially do the upsell thing on your pre-orders. Like, hey, if you pre-order now, you can get the game now. If you give us $40 more, it's like, oh, that's a lot of money. Why not? Especially when publishers are so much fighting for people just to pre-order it all. Like, give that to anybody that buys your game ahead of time and make that the standard. Because that even got to the ridiculous point where I think Battlefield 5 was available about 2 weeks early. If you had, I think, Origin... Premier access.
Yeah. Premier.
Which that's ridiculous. Like 2 weeks early. And then the people that actually pre-ordered those special editions on PC got access to it a few days later. And then the console people with EA access. And then the special editions, I think. And then everybody else. And it's like when you have to go through like five tiers of when people are allowed to play the game, that's a little bit too much. And at that point, you're just exploiting people for how much money they'll give you just to play the game early as possible. And we already have that thing. It's called Early Access.
Yeah.
If you want to release your game as Early Access, you know, well before it's done, you know, feel free to do that. But don't charge like $150 or $100 or whatever. Because at that point, you're just exploiting people for more money for the game you've been telling them they need to have. And I don't know what else. I think that's the big one that's been annoying for most of the year. And I guess just games having too much content just to have content. The way Assassin's Creed Odyssey just has a whole section of the game as just a complete slog where there's just so many quests that only serve a purpose to let you grind for XP, where you're kind of expected either to just grind through them or pay up for the double XP boost. And it's like, you know, the game probably would have been much better for it if you had your XP tuned so that stuff was purely extra stuff and your main campaign stuff was mostly what you needed to do to get through the game. That's sort of what I have come to appreciate about like Sony's open world stuff of late with like Spider-Man, God of War, and Horizon Zero Dawn, where there's plenty of side stuff there if you want to do it. But if you want to just go through with the main campaign stuff, point to point, all that stuff, you're going to have a great time, and it's not going to be trying to get in your way until you know you need to play all the content. If you want to go for the platinum or whatever, you can definitely do that on your own And you'll probably also still have a really good time because there's still not a ton of side content in those games. It's not like here's a way to make it go from, you know, a 30 or 40 hour game to an 80 hour game. It's more like here's like a 25, 30 hour game. If you want to get it to 40, you know, here's some side stuff for you.
Yeah.
It's not like we just need to make this game as long as possible or maybe make it never end, like Forza Horizon 4. Just keep throwing icons on the map, and I don't know what half of them do anymore. especially when they got the seasonal events stuff, and it's like, I don't know what this is for anymore.
Yeah.
I guess there's seasonal ranking stuff. It's like, I don't really care about that shit. Because there's all this other stuff in here, and a lot of the collectibles are also put in places where you have to play some of that content. Because it's like some of the... There's like one on top of a church you can't reach. And that's because you have to keep doing the jumps. It'll unlock one eventually that goes by that church. So you can get that one. It's like, oh, there's a piece of the game that you can't really even do until you play a bunch of the other parts of the game.
Yeah.
And that's just going to put more icons on the map, and then you're going to throw up because there's too much.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it if you try to sort out stuff on that minimap. And then something happens, it'll just turn it all back on again.
Yeah. Yeah, that that made me swear a little bit. It's like...
Better when you go back to the map and it's like, oh, we got to tell you something. You can't skip this because we got to explain to you how driving games work. And now the concept of adding more things to the map, like that's... We have to spend like 20 seconds telling you about this.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. Even though you just... No, I understand this.
Spent 20 seconds doing
this
that.
This is the fourth game. Usually when you get to the fourth game, you're making things easier. You get to the point a little bit quickly. But no, they said, no, we're going to make it take longer. Because that's fun, isn't it? Taking twice as long to do things than it used to.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's the difference because Sony is making a game that specifically has a length and a duration in mind. They've got a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
But, you know, like Assassin's Creed, for instance, it's like, yeah, you can kind of finish it, but they don't ever actually want you to.
Yeah.
They just want you to keep living in that world and throwing crap at you to stay there.
And that's what we call post-game content. It's not it's just, hey, we just throw all this stuff on the map and you figure out how to do it. Because we don't know how to do it.
Yeah. It's irritating.
And that's like the one downside of the Game Pass thing is it's encouraged Microsoft's studios to make games that don't really have ends in any way.
Yeah.
So that you're kind of like, oh, I want to get done with this Forza Horizon 4 thing, but it never wants to let me do that.
Yeah. You can't ever leave. It's like Hotel California.
No, and then you have to do these ridiculous Forzathon quests for 7 million points. And it's like, oh, I had to play in this dumb car for like almost a week because it doesn't control well. And that's your whole week is doing that.
Yeah.
Let me finish games, people.
Yeah, let
me finish. I'd be proud that you can make a game that can be finished, and then people want to keep coming back to it. Yeah. Not make a game where they want to finish it, and you just keep moving the goalpost.
Yeah,
hold a gun to their head,
or you just burn it to the ground and say, "There's no goalpost here."
Yeah, or you play Rocket League and you set the goalpost on fire. So that's great.
Yeah, there are ends, and you just beat the other team or you lose and you move on. Yep. And you do it again. And
see, that's fun.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you got something, Pat?
No, you guys about covered it. Honestly.
Wow. Yeah. So we were just like griping about all the crap that annoyed us this year. So.
No, you guys covered so much territory that I didn't need to be here for this one.
Yeah, so before we look ahead at 2019, was there like one particular story or event in the industry this year that you want to look back on before we move on?
I just think the continued proliferation of classical JRPGs has been one of the really great stories of the year. Octopath Traveler, obviously, Dragon Quest XI, you know, this is a genre on the way back, and it never really should have been in any kind of obscurity to begin with.
Hmm. Yeah, I see that. Chris, you got something? No?
Well, new stories?
Yeah, anything that you just want to bring back.
I don't know. I think the worst story I saw of the year was the Riot Games thing. The whole idea of a company having people at the top that just harass the women and the few women in the company, completely turning it into a hostile workplace, and that's even come up again recently because they decided to suspend one of the guys that was part of that. Only suspended him for 2 months, didn't fire him or anything, just said, hey, you get a 2 month vacation.
Yeah.
And people were obviously not happy about that because it's not really a consequence.
No, not if you're not never learning from it. You know,
and that'd be
2 months paid vacation. Well, whatever. Yeah,
you have to have actual consequences.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll hurt your team, but that sets standards for the way people should act.
So, yeah, I guess I will bring one thing up before we move on. And that's I am very much liking how the middle tier AA games are coming back.
Yes.
We are seeing, you know, publishers like Deep Silver, Paradox, and well, a whole bunch of others. They're releasing smaller games that serve a very specific niche. They typically don't tend to have huge budgets, but, you know, they're not crappily produced either. So I think we're seeing a nice balancing out point as the huge AAA development cycle is very much starting to eat itself at this point. So, yeah.
Especially as we have games that have been in development forever finally coming to the finish line. Like Kingdom Hearts and Shenmue 3, some of these others.
Yeah. Will they be worth it when they're out? We don't know. We'll find out fairly soon.
There'll be assholes willing to spoil it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking ahead to 2019, what is it that we are looking forward to most? You know, in general, for me, it's the fact that we're going to be pretty spoiled for fighting games this year. You know, we're going to have, well, I can name out DOA 6 and MK11 within, I think, 2 months of each other.
Three.
No, there are three.
Yeah, MK is April.
MK is April and DOA 6 is February. So, yeah, we're going to have a lot of very good fighters to play. And, you know, we don't even know what the second half of the year is going to look like.
Yeah, E3 is obviously going to bring some things. Evo's going to bring some things.
Yeah, there will be things. Whether maybe we'll see Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite get a reboot and, you know, actually done properly.
I really hope they don't write that game off as total because there's so much potential there. I will maintain it is still a joy to play that game.
Yeah. As long as, you know, then that one is salvageable. Whether Capcom has the will to do it or not is, you know, still in the air. Everybody's still probably waiting for another Darkstalkers.
I wonder if that gets announced tonight.
We don't know.
Because, you know, Yoshinori Ono always likes to have one more news for you.
Oh, yeah, one more news. I love Ono.
I just have a feeling that this is going to be one of those one more news nights.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. It's like, you know, E3 is starting to become less and less relevant. So, we're going to. I suspect that's one of the things we'll be seeing a lot more of in 2019 is companies just doing it themselves.
Yeah. Well, Capcom was kind of relegated to it this year since PlayStation didn't have their PlayStation experience.
Yeah, Sony just kind of decided, we're not doing that.
Because previously, Capcom Cup had always coincided with that.
Yeah, so they were kind of forced to just go out and set that up themselves instead of having a venue provided for them, which was a little irritating, but, you know, they managed it.
Yeah.
What else am I looking forward to in 2019? Well, I do want to finally see what Crackdown 3 is like. I mean, I suspect it's going to be like an icon hunt, like Forza Horizon 4 is.
Yeah.
Although it will be an icon hunt with explosions, so that may help.
Yeah, but the icons are the orbs.
Yeah. Well, if they're the orbs, then they're not on the map because you have to find them.
Yeah.
So
maybe if they're like Forza, they give you a treasure map that you pay for.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, people stop doing this shit. They just put it on the map. Because if you want to go find, you know, 100,000 items, you know, you can go do it. Whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, I am looking forward to Terry Crews blowing stuff up. Yeah. So that's going to be interesting.
As long as it's better than two, I'm good with that.
Well, that's a very low bar.
Yeah, so, well, they've got two games. One that's good and one that's not good.
Yeah, one that's good, one that's not good, and, well, the other Microsoft games that have come out since then have been, let's see, Sea of Thieves on Game Pass, yeah, that's a thing. State of Decay 2, which was, yeah, it was okay, it wasn't great,
but yeah.
It wasn't terrible either. And, yeah, Forza Horizon 4, which, yeah, we've talked about at length. So hopefully this next game will be decent. Maybe it will have an end. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe the end is like when you blow up the entire city. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
We realize the narrator's evil again. Oh, no, yeah. I forgot.
So, yeah. What about you, Pat or Chris? Who wants to go next?
Oh, just fighting games again. I about covered it. I'm really thinking we're going to be in for some big announcements both tonight and going into next year. I think we might hear about something at Evo Japan next month. We just had that Granblue Fantasy game announced by Arc System Works. So that's coming. But really, I want to see the next RPG announcements. I want to see what's next from Studio Asano. I want to see what's next from Tokyo RPG Factory. I want to see what Falcom is counting down to, because they've got that countdown on their site for what I'm guessing is a new non-Trails Legend of Heroes arc. There are just so many things in the pipeline that we don't know completely about yet, but there seems to be plenty of reason to be excited, just because it's the tried and true sources that are bringing you this stuff. And so that in and of itself, I think sets 2019 up to be really strong.
Yeah. All right. Chris?
Yeah. I think the exciting thing for 2019 is that Nintendo finally gets back on track with their non-ports, sort of just putting out more original stuff this year instead of last year, which was kind of very heavily weighted on remasters and ports. So they've got things like... trying to look what all they got here. I think we're supposed to get the Yoshi game this year. Yoshi's Yoshi Crafted World, Metroid Prime 4,
Pokemon game,
Daemon X Machina. We got Fire Emblem, the new Fire Emblem.
Oh, yes. Three Houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Animal Crossing coming out this year. It's like a, and I guess also Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. Though I would happily trade that for Marvel Heroes 2. get a game that's actually good. Let's see, there's Town. That's the new game from the Pokemon devs. Game Freak. The one that's kind of centered around having this kind of RPG-style town that you're kind of building up, and then all the quests take place within it, I think. And that's also pretty cool to see. Yeah, like a lot more like original and interesting stuff than there was this year, which was like, hey, here's Captain Toad, here's the Bayonetta games, here's, you know, this and this and this. A lot of stuff coming off of the Wii U, which is well worth having, but it kind of took over the whole year for the most part, up until the end here where they had Smash and Super Mario Party and some of those other games.
Yeah.
And I think it's also be interesting just to have a, just looking over this list of games, there's just a great amount of variety of what's coming out this year. It's not really like looking like it's too weighted in one genre or anything else, because we got like action games like Devil May Cry 5, you know, got shooters, plenty of RPGs, some adventure stuff. I don't know about racing games. That might be the one that's kind of lacking right now. But it's also a little bit too early to find out what all is coming out. But yeah, it looks like it's going to be a really interesting year just for getting new and interesting stuff.
Yep. Yeah. I'll also mention Bloodstained, as I forgot to mention that. That is supposed to be a, say, first half 2019 release, allegedly. Unless that slips again, that should happen. So, yeah, a lot of really good stuff. And I'll actually finally get to play a Symphony of the Night modern version that doesn't suck. Made by the original creator. So, you know, it's
good. There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's kind of it for us for this year, as far as podcasts go, at least.
Yes.
There's going to be
lots of gaming left.
Lots of gaming left, and there's going to be a whole lot of content showing up on the site over the next few days as we all count down our top games of the year, culminating in the overall game of the year for Smash Pad itself. So, yeah, stay tuned to that. It's going to be fun. And I'm sure there will be a lot of arguing, as there already has been in the Smash Pad Facebook group. Well, it's been good humor arguing, but anyway, you know how we do.
Yes.
Remind everybody that you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator. And, so for Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, and Lee Lam, and all of the Smash Pad staff, I'd like to wish everybody who's listening a fantastic holiday, and we'll see you in 2019.